Welcome back to another Late Night Rabbits episode. I'm your host, Matt, and tonight we are going to part 2 of Gary Webb's series. Now, it's been a while since we've done part 1. Part 1 came out in December, and it's been a long time, so I would recommend you listening to the CIA scandal before you listen to this one. But in short, if you don't, that's fine. We'll kind of touch up on some things about who Gary Webb is and all of that. Now, before we start, I do want to make a formal introduction of who Gary Webb is. We didn't necessarily discuss him as a journalist, his life, what led up to his death. We'll all get there. Because last episode, if I remember correctly, we talked about the CIA scandal with smuggling drugs and allowing drug smugglers who were immigrants into our country. The United States and the whole 10 yards with that scandal. Now, the second part we are going to discuss is where we kind of left off. It's now 1996 is what I meant to say. And this is right around the time the Dark Light series was coming out. But before we continue, thank you for all your support. Hopefully you had a great night. And hopefully you had a great day. And if you haven't followed us anywhere, whether it's Facebook or any podcast platform that you are currently listening to us on, please do so. Because we do put out good episodes. And if you're following us on Facebook, you will get updates on episode series, the whole 10 yards. But without further ado, let's get back into this episode. Now, this episode is focusing on Gary Webb. Gary Webb was an American journalist who had a journalist career way back, even before he became big with the Dark Lion series. He even blew up a little bit when the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake occurred and even won a Pulitzer Prize award for it. Now, right around this time, a few years after, in 1995, Webb began researching Dark Lions, which would be a series that kind of brought the CIA scandal out into the public. Now, sadly, despite what the government said and what he received as criticism, if you have not listened to part 1 of the CIA scandal, go do so. Like I said, you'll understand that the government is lying in the reports, but we are still going to go over the reports regardless. But when he published these Dark Alliance articles, it became a series for the Mercury News. It came out in 3 parts, from August 18th through August 20th of 1996. One was a long article, and 2 articles or so, was published. It was also posted on the Mercury News website with additional information, including documents cited in the series, audio recordings of people that were quoted in the articles as well. So what this series claimed was that for the better part of a decade, a San Francisco Bay Area drug ring sold tons of cocaine to the Crips and the Bloods of L.A. It funneled millions in drug profits to a Latin American guerrilla army run by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. This drug ring opened the first pipeline between Colombia's cocaine cartels and the black neighborhoods of Los Angeles. And as a result, Los Angeles had a crack explosion inside of its own urban neighborhood. Now, to show this, he had focused on three men within this series: Ricky Ross, Oscar Danilo Blandon, and Nolan Meneses. Ross was a major drug dealer at that time in L.A. Blandon and Meneses were immigrants who smuggled drugs into the United States, and then they supplied them to dealers like Ross. After introducing the three, the first article discussed primarily Blandon and Meneses, their relationship with the Contras, and their relationship with the CIA. Much of the article did highlight the failure of law enforcement agencies to successfully prosecute them, and stated that this was largely due to their Contra and CIA connections. Now let's hold up before we jump over a summary of the second article. Remember that the CIA has done so much with them, not just with him entirely, but with drug smuggling, as we know. We know that at some point between this time even, that they were still smuggling drugs. Government, in short, not just the CIA, but government agencies, presidents, the government entirely, has done some pretty shady shit. Whether it was ejecting black prisoners in prison with AIDS and calling it an experiment, or, you know, polluting water in Flint, Michigan, or 9/11 to Afghanistan, you know, the whole 10 yards. But now let's focus on the second article. This article described Blandon's background and how he began smuggling cocaine to support the Contras. Meneses was already an established smuggler and a Contra supporter, and he taught Blandon how to smuggle and provide him with cocaine. When Ross came along, he discovered the market for crack in L.A. Then he began buying cocaine from Blandon. Blandon and Meneses also had a high-volume supply of low-priced, high-purity cocaine. This allowed Ross, just like how it kind of allows every drug dealer, to sell to the L.A. market and move on. Then in city after city, local dealers either bought from Ross, or they didn't get any crack at all. And what I mean is kind of like that with every drug smuggling ring. It is, you know, you have these rings that may or may not be big. Yeah, you have a high stockpile or you don't. But ideally, when you are in high demand as a drug smuggling ring, you kind of own the city. You're kind of like Al Capone. You're like every other drug crime lord, like El Chapo and all of those other drug smugglers. And you kind of own the city. You kind of are the cartel. You are, you know, whatever people say you are. And when you own a city such as Los Angeles, you're always, just like every other city, you're always going to have people coming to you. They're going to hear that word on the street. They're like, oh yeah, go to Ross, go to Blandon, go to Meneses. You know, the whole storyline of it. Now, sadly, if you didn't buy from Ross once again, he didn't give two shits about you. He wanted a deal. And I think that also has to do with a lot of other drug rings and leaders within those drug rings and kingpins and all those types of people, because you come to them and you come to them for a purpose. That purpose isn't necessarily to not buy from them. You're getting something from them one way or another, and if you don't, you just don't get anything out of it. The third article discussed the social effects of the crack trade, noting that it had a disparate effect on African Americans, asking why crack became so prevalent in the black community of LA. The article credited Blandon, referring to him as a Johnny Appleseed of crack California. It also found disparities in the treatment of black and white traffickers within the justice system, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more, contrasting the treatment of Blandon and Ross after their arrest for drug trafficking, because Blandon cooperated with DEA and he only spent 28 months in prison, became a paid government informant, and received permanent resident status through our government. While Ross was also released early after cooperating in an investigation of police corruption, he was rearrested a few months later, and a sting operation arranged with Blandon's help. The article suggested that this was in repetition for Ross's testimony in the corruption case. Now, today we see a huge scenario wherein it comes to our justice system. I know a lot of people don't hear about it, a lot of people don't care, a lot of people just doesn't think that it can happen, because it can. We see people that are caught with weed getting almost life for weed. When you have a white person or another person, let's say a person that molests kids in the justice system, that person is typically given probation and only probation. And if that person is lucky to serve time, it's only 5 years in prison, even shorter, depending if they're not dead yet and if they show good behavior. Now, obviously, when a government scandal occurs within this whole realm of the 10 yards, definitely when it involves the government, it's like 9/11 in Afghanistan, or Clinton scandal, or Russian, politics, it blows up, and there's a lot of criticism. Now, fortunately, Gary Webb got a lot of that criticism. He did get a lot of support, though, but majority of what he got was bad things. There were other papers that were slow to pick up the story, but African Americans quickly took note, especially in South Central LA, where the dealers discussed in the series had been active. They were outraged by the series' charges. California Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein also took note and wrote to CIA Director John Deutsch and Attorney General Janet Reno, asking for investigations into the article's allegations. Maxine Waters, representative for California's 35th District, which includes the South Central LA area, was also outraged by the articles and became one of Webb's strongest supporters. She urged the CIA, the Department of Justice, and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence to investigate. By the end of September, three federal investigations had been announced. An investigation into the CIA allegations conducted by CIA Inspector General Frederick Hitz, an investigation into the law enforcement allegations by Justice Department Inspector General Michael Bromwich, and a second investigation into the CIA by the House Intelligence Committee. Webb's continuing reporting also triggered a forced investigation. Now, what this brought and what it discussed was from the first article where it discussed the failure of law enforcement agencies to prosecute Blondin and Meneses. And it kind of ties into one of the raids that occurred. So in 1986, there was a raid on Blondin's drug organization by the LA Sheriff's Department, which the article suggested had produced evidence of CIA ties to drug smuggling that was later suppressed. Now, when Webb wrote another story on the raid evidence in early October, it received wide attention in LA. Then, at that moment, there was that other investigation, a forced investigation, and it was started by the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. Now, I don't know necessarily when the 1986 drug raid information got out or, you know, was revealed, but right around that time, whether it was the first article or whatnot, it came out. But the thing that should surprise people about this is when this came out for the 1986 drug raid, the article had suggested that there were produced evidence of CIA ties to drug smuggling, and this was later suppressed. I don't know who necessarily suppressed it, but it should be eyebrow raising. Because typically the government likes to suppress certain type of information like this. In other papers, there was coverage about the Dark Alliance series. Now, the federal investigations also made other newspapers investigate, and several papers published articles suggesting that the claims in the Dark Alliance series were overstated. The first detailed article on the series claims appeared in the Washington Post in early October. In a front page article, reporters Roberto Cerro and Walter Pincus wrote that available information, quote unquote, did not support the series' claims and that the rise of crack was a broad-based phenomenon, driven in numerous places by diverse players. The article discussed Webb's contacts with Ross's attorney and prosecution complaints of how Ross's defense had used Webb's series. The New York Times article that was published, or there was actually, I should say, two articles published in mid-October were both written by reporter Tim Golden. One article dealing mostly with the response of Los Angeles Black community to the stories described the series' evidence as thin. Golden also referred to the controversy over Webb's contacts with Ross's lawyer and the article citing interviews with current and former intelligence and law enforcement officials. Questioned the importance of the drug dealers that were discussed in the series, both in the crack cocaine trade and in supporting the Nicaraguan Contras fight against the Sandinista government in Nicaragua. Okay, so then the LA Times published the most devoted article compared to anyone else. They published a three-part series called The Cocaine Trail, This ran from October 20th to 22nd of 1996 and was researched by a team of 17 reporters. The three articles in the series were written by four reporters: Jesse Katz, Doyle McManus, John Mitchell, and Sam Fullwood. The first article by Katz developed a different picture of the origins of the crack trade than Dark Alliance had described, with more gangs and smugglers participating. The second article by McManus was the longest of the series and dealt with the role of the Contras in the drug trade and the CIA knowledge of drug activities by the Contras. McManus wrote that Blanett and Manise's contributions to Contra organizations were significantly less than the millions claimed in the series, and stated that there was no evidence that the CIA had tried to protect them. The third article by Mitchell and Fullwood covered the effects of crack on African Americans and how it affected the reaction to some of the rumors that rose after the Dark Alliance series. In 2013, Jesse Katz, a former LA Times reporter, said of the newspaper coverage, she stated that as an LA Times reporter, we saw the series in the San Jose Mercury News and kind of wondered how legit it was and kind of put it under a microscope. She went on to say, or he, I don't know, but they went on to say that it was kind of a nutcracker, or muckracker, I should say, and that they really didn't do anything to advance his work or illuminate much to the story, and it pretty much ruined Gary Webb's career. Now, before we continue, let's continue and kind of think about this, okay? Now, we have each newspaper that had published their own investigation saying that there's no evidence, but the one main thing that they did say is that there are more people involved. And obviously, whenever we talk about drug crimes and drug rings like El Chapo, the cartel, even smaller gangs like MS-13 or your local hometown gangs, we have a broader picture. Obviously, it may be just one huge ringpin or kingpin, I mean, at the time. Like let's say Ross, and he's the main supplier, and then people start making their own, and people start selling their own and distributing their own. They're now getting their distributions from down in South America or Mexico even. It's one big tangled mess when we talk about it, because obviously we have people like El Chapo that did everything. Obviously, we have the smaller gangs distributing as well. In short, they are kind of right about there are more people than just these three people. Talk about the size of LA today. Talk about California and the size of California. It's a big state. It's like getting, for my state, if we ain't getting it from one of the biggest cities in South Dakota for weed, let's just point out, we're getting it from Colorado, because Colorado is legal with weed. South Dakota isn't. So if we aren't getting our drugs from somewhere within our state, we always have an outside source. For example, as well, Nebraska and their hard drugs come from the cartel from Mexico. Now, when and if that drug or those drugs reach Nebraska, whether it's Grand Island area or Omaha area, which is two typical places where the cartel brings their drugs, they disperse them throughout the United States. Now, when these articles were published, the Mercury News had a response. The executive editor for Mercury News, Jerome Seppos, wrote to the Post defending the series. The Post refused to print his letter, and Seppos also asked reporter Pete Carey to write a critique of the series for publication in the Mercury News, and had the controversial website artwork changed, which was person smoking crack pipe or something. And Carey critique appeared in mid-October and went through several of the Post criticisms of the series. This included the importance of Blandon's drug ring and spreading crack, questions about Blandon's testimony in court, how specific series allegations about CIA involvement had been, giving Webb's responses. When the LA Times series appeared, Seppos again wrote to defend the original series. He also defended the series in interviews with all three papers. The extent of the criticism, though, outwon, and then convinced Seppos that Mercury News had to acknowledge to its readers that the series had been subjected to strong criticism. He did this in a column that appeared on November 3rd, defending the series, but also committing the paper to a review of major criticisms. Seppos' column drew editorial responses from both the New York Times and the Washington Post. An editorial in the Times, while criticizing the series for making unsubstantiated charges, conceded that it did find drug smuggling and dealing by Nicaraguans with at least tentative connections to the Contras, and called for further investigation. The Post's response came from the paper's ombudsman, Geneva Overholser. Overholser was harshly critical of the series, reported by a seemingly hot-headed fellow willing to have people leap to conclusions his reporting couldn't back up. But while calling the flaws in the series unforgivably careless journalism. Now, once again, scandals blow up, scandals get a lot of criticism. We've seen that a lot within our own government, whether it was Clinton, Nixon, Obama, Trump, Bush, the whole 10 yards, even not just presidents, but the FBI and CIA, the whole government. We see this and we have both sides of the story. We have one side agreeing that should be something done about it, and we have the other side saying these are false. Definitely, if they look up to the president, or if they, look up to the government in some way, shape, or form. Now, it's no different whenever a journalist does it. Journalism today wasn't what it was back then. It was a lot more investigative, was a lot more less opinionated back then, meaning that journalists didn't just turn to social media for an article, as in they use that article and rewrite their own article. They actually had to go out and investigate that article or that story instead of just finding it online. And today we see no different in a sort of way when it comes to journalism. Journalists have changed along with journalism. Not trying to get too off topic, but it really has. Like I said, the laziness of a lot of journalism comes from social media, and I can just find an article to write about online and then say I'm doing my own investigation, or I can do the work. And on top of that, we have a corporate media and corporate media, just like local media these days, journalists have a lot of criticism coming at them. So whenever a scandal or something big like this happens, it's going to blow up and it's not going to look good for the journalist. Definitely if it's producing so much criticism that the company that publish it, like Mercury News Sun or Mercury News, I mean, had to be like, yeah, these aren't true. Now with all this criticism, sadly, Gary Webb's career was ruined as a journalist. He did resign and his series ended. Now, let's talk about the reports. When we talk about the reports, like I said in the beginning of this part two, we do see a lot of things happening. We have these investigations that come out saying there's no claims of evidence or no evidence to base these claims, I should say. But like I said, if you went back to and listened to part one, a lot of these claims were already happening. Whether or not the LA crack epidemic bloomed in LA, it was already happening though, behind Americans' back. And American journalist Gary Webb just said, "There's something going on, and I'm gonna go investigate it." That's what he did. Now let's go look at the very first report. I could go in order, but we're gonna go with the CIA's report from the Justice Department investigations, prosecutions. As I've already stated about what the article said about the Crips and Bloods, they talk about that a lot. Now they do kind of add a little bit more in the reports. The Dark Alliance series recounted how Ross began peddling small quantities of cocaine in the early 1980s and rapidly grew into one of the largest cocaine dealers in Southern California until he was convicted of federal drug trafficking charges in March of 1996. The claims also from Meneses and Blandon, the two individuals with ties to the Fuerza Democrática Nicaraguense, or FDN, one group compromising the Nicaraguan or Nicaragua, oh, sorry about that. Pretty much the Contras. I know that's a really hard word to say, but we'll get better at it. Blandon and Meneses reportedly sold tons of cocaine to Ross, who in turn converted it to crack and sold it to the black communities of South Central LA. Now, the stories, according to this report, had previously been written about the Contras' alleged ties to drug trafficking. For example, on December 20th of 1985, before Gary Webb published his series. Let's just throw that out there. This was already before. But on December 20th, 1985, an Associated Press article claimed that three Contra groups engaged in cocaine trafficking in part to help finance a war against their own country. Rumors, according to the report, about illicit activities on the part of the Contras had also been probed into Senate hearings in the late 1980s. However, according once again to this report, the Mercury News series contained, or at least many readers interpreted to contain, a new sensational claim that the CIA and other agencies of the United States government were responsible for the crack epidemic that ravaged black communities across the country. The newspaper article suggested that the United States government had protected two drug dealers from prosecution, and either knowingly permitted them to peddle massive quantities of cocaine to the black residents of South Central LA, or turned a blind eye to such activity. Now, it continues going on, talking about Mercury News and the whole claims. Let's see. Let me skim this really fast. Now, it kind of goes to the contra story in part B of this report. As noted above, this Mercury News series was not only a story about the U.S. government and crack cocaine, it also revisited allegations concerning the Contras and the drug trafficking that had been reported upon and investigated for many years. For example, as they have stated in this, in 1987, the Subcommittee on Terrorism, Narcotics, and International Operations of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations began an investigation focusing on allegations received by the subcommittee chairman, Senator John Kerry, which I think he's still around the government. But these pretty much said, or was concerning, I should say, illegal gun running and narcotics trafficking associated with the Contra. A two-year investigation produced a 1,166-page document report in 1989, analyzing the involvement of Contra groups and supporters in drug trafficking and the role of the United States government officials in these activities. Allegations of cocaine trafficking by Contras also arose during the investigation conducted by independent counsel Lawrence Walsh into the Iran-Contra affair. Drug trafficking allegations, however, were not the focus of that inquiry, and the Walsh report included no findings in these allegations. The issue of drug trafficking by the Contras has also been the subject of many books published before Gary Webb's series. It is undisputed that individuals like Meneses and Blanton, who had ties to the Contras, were Contra sympathizers, I should say, were convicted of drug trafficking either in the United States or in Central America. There is also undeniable evidence that certain groups associated with the Contras engaged in this drug trafficking. The persuasiveness of such activities within the Contra movement and the United States government's knowledge of those activities, however, are still the subject of debate. And it is beyond the scope of the OIG's investigation, which we describe below, yet it is noteworthy that, as interesting as the story of Contras and illicit drug deals may be, it was not the catalyst for the public's or the media's interest in the Drug Alliance series. Investigations into the alleged connection between Contras and cocaine dealing were conducted, and the articles were printed in the late 1980s, at a time when interest in the Iran-Contra story was cresting. Neither those investigations nor the published articles tracking the allegations sparked a firestorm of outrage comparable to that created by the Dark Alliance series. Now, if you don't remember anything about the Iran-Contra, it was when President Ronald Reagan was in office, and pretty much if you don't remember anything about that, it's pretty much we gave guns and weapons to terrorists for American citizens. It was one of the biggest stories in his whole entire career, for Reagan, and that honestly, I don't think ever truly destroyed his presidency. You know, unlike if we talk about Bush or Obama or Trump doing it, or even Biden giving weapons, nowadays it would become such a massive story. But back then, it was a massive story, but not enough to necessarily ruin his presidency. Now, when it talks about the reaction from the journalism community, obviously, we know that it was highly criticized by multiple newspapers, and it goes into these allegations from Mercury News and what other people have said. Let's see. Surprisingly, though, the TV media like ABC, CNN, or whatever around was at the time, did not pick up on it. It was mainly located in the newspapers as such a bigger story than it was on TV. Now, when we talk about, you know, the government hiding whatever it can from American citizens, they do a pretty good job at saying, you know, these allegations are wrong, these allegations are right. They even did say, though, that the allegations, or the evidence, I should say, between cartels, or Contras, I mean, not cartels, but Contras, and, you know, the other half, whether it was more drug smugglers or whatnot, played a part in this epidemic in LA. Now, what they did consistently say, and I, like I said, I'm going to stress this enough, maybe you just know it, is that the government is going to try to silence any scandal against them the best that they can. They really are going to try. They're going to try to squash whoever wrote it. They're going to try to support whoever went against it. They're going to go do their own investigations. You know, whether or not they lied in their investigations or not, you know, whenever they come out, like I said, definitely how times have changed in this day and age, just like back then when government investigations came out, it had support and it didn't. Some people didn't believe in the investigations, or just like how some people didn't believe in the Dark Alliance series. It just happens. But whenever, like I said before, whenever the government does something like this and says, you know, we're not in the wrong, we don't know what you're talking about, it has a higher possibility of them knowing what you're talking about and knowing that you're right on some key of it. Now, I'm not going to say the Dark Alliance series is the best journalism out there. I'm pretty sure if a top journalist other than Gary Webb wrote it, it could be held a little bit more as heroic journalism. But sadly, like a lot of these newspapers do claim, and a lot of modern day, you know, journalists and small YouTubers that are journalists on YouTube, they all say that it honestly wasn't the best. It didn't necessarily provide the best evidence. It did provide some, but it wasn't necessarily on a basis of it. And it didn't necessarily stand on its own. Now, when we continue with this, you know, it just finishes off with what other newspapers have said, including Columbia Journalism Review, that was published May to June 1997, I think. I don't know how long. It was an article though that analyzed the Mercury News series and how Webb specifically explained how he arrived at a figure which he believed to be between 12 million and $18 million. Quote unquote, "My stories were about the drug money," Blanton admitted delivering to Meneses for the FDN. "When you look at that cash, the sums are obvious," Blanton told a federal grand jury in 1994 that he sold between 200 and 300 kilos of cocaine for Meneses in LA. In court, Blanton swore that all the profits from that cocaine went to the Contras and said he was selling it for $60,000 a kilo. In short, this guy made some major money if he was selling coke per kilo for 60 grand. And 60 grand nowadays is different, it's more. And some might call it an extrapolation to describe 12 million to $18 million as millions. I call it math, quote unquote. In contrast, Webb had made other statements, all but stating that the Dark Alliance series did demonstrate CIA involvement in the spread of crack cocaine in America. In September of 1996, the immediate wake of the Dark Alliance series, Webb reportedly posted the following comment on the Mercury News electronic bulletin board. Quote unquote, to come from Gary Webb himself. I know there was a jump, but anyhow, one thing that I did want to respond to directly is the writer who claimed there wasn't any proof of CIA involvement in this thing. That's like saying there's no proof of General Motors' involvement in making Chevrolets. I also heard a great line while I was doing a radio show in Florida yesterday. Now we know what CIA really stands for: crack in America. Now, I'm kind of going to go back a little bit with this report, not too back, but a little bit more with the journalism stuff and what this report says, so we may learn something a little bit more. So let's go to part D. Let's actually go back to C. Once again, C talks about the criticism from other journalists and other journalism communities and stuff, like the LA Times, where they briefly discussed the Mercury News series in several articles in August and September of 1996 that covered Ross's postponed sentencing and other events in the Ross trial. Similarly, the Dark Alliance series did not initially receive much television coverage, with the exception of CNN, which ran several pieces on the story in September, and the NBC Nightly News, which ran a piece about the allegations on September 27th of 1996. By early October of 1996, however, that media coverage went from little to big. The Washington Post weighed in first on October 2nd of 1996, with a short analysis, "Running with the CIA story." Reporter says series didn't go as far as reader took it, noting that the allegation of CIA involvement in drug trafficking in the U.S. has not actually been made in the article. Then the Washington Post followed up 2 days later on October 4th of 1996 with a story entitled "The CIA and Crack: Evidence is Lacking, an Alleged Plot." Their piece concluded that available information does not support the conclusion that the CIA backed Contras or even Nicaraguans in general played a major role in the emergence of crack as a narcotic in widespread use across the U.S. Now, the Washington Post piece also did emphasize apparent contradictions between Ross's and Blandon's accounts. For example, while Blandon claimed to have been a used cars salesman in 1982 who on the site sold 2 kilograms of cocaine for Manises, Ross said Blandon was instead handling bulk sales of 100 kilograms of cocaine for Manises at the time. The article did not seek to resolve these issues and merely noted the conflicts. The Washington Post piece then followed up again on October 20th and 21st of the same year by 2 New York Times articles that also found fault with the Mercury News series. One article was titled, "Through Evidence Then, Tell of CIA and Drugs Has Life of Its Own," primarily reported on the reactions within the black community to the series. The other series was quote-unquote pivotal figure of newspaper series, maybe only bit player. Noted problems with the series' portrayal of Blandon and Manises, and concluded after conducting interviews of various unnamed sources. And this comes from the article, "While there are indications in American intelligence files and elsewhere that Mr. Manises and Mr. Blandon may indeed have provided modest support for the rebels, including perhaps weapons, there is no evidence that either man was a rebel official or had anything to do with the CIA. Nor is there proof that the relatively small amounts of cocaine was sometimes claimed to have brokered on behalf of the insurgents had a remotely significant role in the explosion of crack that began around the same time." Obviously, like I said, other articles like LA Times was devoted to it. The first installment from LA Times devoted a discussion of the origins of crack cocaine. It claimed that they had found crack cocaine that existed in LA long before Ross began selling it. In response to the claim that Ross had played a principal role in bringing cocaine to South Central Los Angeles, it identified several drug dealers from South Central Los Angeles who were contemporaries of Ross and were reputed to have sold similar quantities of cocaine. Second half of their installment was a series that explored whether there was in fact a CIA-sanctioned operation that funneled millions of dollars into the Contras. It did find no proof that Blandon and Manises had given millions of dollars to the Contra Party, and could confirm only that Blandon had been given about $50,000. I don't know how they necessarily confirmed that, but somewhat along the line, Blandon did receive $50,000, and they did confirm that part of the Dark Lines series. So maybe the CIA did really have an involvement, but they did a really good job of giving $50,000 to this guy, Blandon. No, it seems like a really, really great government cover-up, though. You know, because obviously nobody's really going to find true proof of cover up from the government this big. But like I said, sometimes slip ups happen, and where the hell did $50,000 come from? And when and who gave it to Blandon? Indeed, the Los Angeles Times article concluded that the Mercury News had arrived at its $1 million estimate of Manises and Blandon donations based on its own value or on calculations derived from the the volume of cocaine that they were selling, and Blanda's statement that what he sold he gave to the Contras. So they're pretty much saying Mercury News got it right at that part. But they did their own calculations, and their calculations don't matter. Our investigation matters. That's what LA Times in the second article pretty much stated. It's like, these are more likely true, but it's based on their calculations and Webb's calculations based off of the volume of cocaine that were being sold and that Blanda's statement that what he sold he gave to the Contras. Rejecting the Dark Alliance assertion that Blanda had set profits to Contras from 1981 to 1986. The Los Angeles Times found, based upon Blanda's testimony, that he had sent profits to the Contras only 1 year. They also suggested that based on interviews with various CIA officials and former government officials, the CIA involvement in such a scheme was improbable. Now remember, who gives two shits on what a CIA official that's currently employed with the government at that time is going to say to an investigator? Who gives two shits? Because ideally, the government, whether it's a CIA official or the actual government or the CIA head, they're going to say, we can't confirm nor deny that. The government is going to say, we can't tell you that, you know. So in short, it's leaving Webb and all these other journalists that are trying to investigate Webb's claims falling short. Now, continuing on, the article quoted the chief investigator for Senator Kerry's subcommittee investigation, Jack Blum, or Blum, whatever, is saying that while the CIA did not have agents selling drugs to fund the Contras, the United States government may have opened channels that helped drug dealers bring drugs into the United States and protected them from law enforcement. At that point, all journalism or journalists from other newspapers should have been like, oh shit, you know, they found some sort of evidence of government involvement and all that and law enforcement involvement. The other two newspapers said there was no involvement. The law enforcement pretty much wasn't existing. There was no cover-up in law enforcement. There was no cover-up in the government. But Los Angeles Times said from their own, or from John Kerry's own person, saying that the CIA did not have agents selling drugs to fund the Contras, but the United States government may have opened channels that help drug dealers. That's what they quoted in their articles in contradiction to saying that CIA involvement was not probable, but government involvement was. For me, I don't know about you, but that's a pretty big jump, saying, yes, we got no CIA, but we got government involvement. At that point, everybody should have just been like, Webb's probably right. Nobody's saying that still. The last installment of the Los Angeles Times series examined the reaction in Black community to the series, and quote-unquote based off conspiracy theories at the time. The Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, and Washington Post articles were criticized by some who believe that the mainstream press was attempting to minimize the story that it had failed to cover. Some accused the papers of erecting straw men by accusing the Mercury News of making allegations that it had not, in fact, made, e.g. that the CIA, quote-unquote, targeted communities into which crack cocaine was distributed. I know I said in the very first half that the CIA, just like the government, ain't going to say that they put AIDS or whatever it was into black prisoners. Later on, they do. In short, the government ain't going to admit shit. It's like if we had UFO technology or we had alien bodies, they ain't going to admit shit. Yeah, they're kind of starting to reopen the blue book, but that's besides the point. In this case, and in this time, and like this time at the investigation, it just seemed minimizing. It seemed just like Webb's criticism. These three newspapers and these journalists were also facing the same criticism as minimizing a story that should exist, but nobody knows where to start. And that's the sad part. I don't think either journalist, even Gary Webb, knew where to start. I think Gary Webb was more focused on the crack cocaine epidemic, and initially shifting sides to saying the CIA was involved. And in the other newspapers, it kind of seems the same way. They're mocking Mercury News, but their failure to actually kind of investigate and be smart with investigative journalism is not there either. And I get why minimizing a story may be helpful. Like I said, at the same time, the Iran-Contra deal was blowing up in the media. And people were like, we got this story. Which story is going to be more? We have evidence of Iran-Contra, but we don't have evidence of the CIA helping Contra out. Like I said, despite all the criticism, Mercury News continued to defend the Dark Alliance series. We aren't really going to go over what Sipo said again, but we even ain't going to go over what Mercury News came up with either. But what I do want to find out, hopefully in the other future reports that we're going to read in the next episode, is the effects that it had on the black communities. And I'm going to tell you why that's important right now. That's one of the biggest claims that anyone can make. It's like saying that only Hispanics have involvement in drugs. You know, ideally, everybody, even back then, had involvement with some sort of drug, whether it was weed, crack, meth if it was around, I'm pretty sure it was. You know, everybody had involvement of some sort with some sort of drug back then. Because during that time, we kind of reached the peak of a hippie stage, you know. Everybody was trying out LSDs, you know, weed, and so on and so forth. Now, the reason that I want to know more about why it had such a criticism from black communities, I feel like that's important due to the fact, like I said, not just black communities were doing drugs. That's like you going to 7-Eleven and saying, I see a white person that might be on crack. It must affect the white people around here. You know, it's kind of making a jarring, unbolded, unfounded claim, saying that crack was only in black communities. And I think, I don't know if that was Gary Webb's intention. I think he needed to focus also not just on the black communities, but how each community in LA was affected. Despite Ross's and Brennan's and Nice's, ring in South Central LA, it obviously moved out of South Central LA at some point, not just outside the United States, because, hell, I don't know anything about South America and the country where the conscious were located or are located. They're not black. I'm pretty sure they're not black. Pretty sure they're not just white. A drug affects somebody differently. And sadly, I read a article, not to get too off topic with it this, but where article how the government at some point literally used human beings as their test subjects to see the effects of different type of drugs and how the drugs would react with different people and different racial communities. And Gary Webb's article, like I said, makes that big bold claim that at some profound moment, black communities were not just minimized, but popularized with doom crack. He never stated that despite other people being involved, other races, it must just be the black communities. And that's a sad thing. I want to know what the black communities think of it. It's like every other community, Just because somebody's acting like a crackhead doesn't mean that they're on crack. Just because a drug is so popular in a certain neighborhood of a certain city of a certain state doesn't mean that whole community is doing drugs. Doesn't mean that one race of community is doing drugs. Everyone, or mostly everyone of every race, is doing a drug, even if it's South Central LA at this point. So I wish he, and just like how other newspapers and journalists were reporting on this part, I wish they focused on not just black communities, but I wish that just like the CIA report too, actually included what these communities thought. And why is it only focused on just a black community or communities in South Central Los Angeles? But without further ado, the next episode we're going to go focus on, I think we just did the Justice Department report. Yeah, we did. We are going to do the CIA report, and then the House Committee report, and then hopefully within the episode we can conclude the series. And if we don't, there might be a part four because I kind of want to focus on his death and not just slide his death in. But we'll try to make it work. But those are the things that we are going to focus on in part three of the CIA scandal. Once again, thank you for tuning in to another Late Night Rabbits episode. And see you guys next time on whatever episode is going to come out next. You guys have a great night. Hopefully this helped you out. Hopefully you guys weren't doubting me. If you were, that's okay. And I know I didn't mention what my Facebook name is for this podcast, but it's After Dark Coast to Coast Killers. Just remember that. Follow us. We're almost halfway there to 1,000 followers and 1,000 likes for that page. And once again, thank you guys for your great support, and see you next time on this podcast.